But having a conversation with someone that has a slightly different set of rules than you have, I found this to be fuel for creativity for me.
Hi, everyone. Welcome, and thank you for joining me. My name is Franco Vriano, and I'll be your host for the Tech Plus Art podcast. Tech Plus Art is the community for curious individuals and creators who are looking to make a dent in the universe. Together, we're exploring the new frontiers of creativity, humanity, and how emerging technologies will continue to shape our culture, professions, products, and much more. Join me on this journey as we speak with artists, makers, researchers, designers, and creators from all backgrounds and fields. Tech Plus Art is an inclusive community, and we make our content for you, so we want to hear from you. If you have any feedback, suggestions, topics you'd like us to explore or contribute to yourself, reach out to us on Twitter or via the website. You can check us out at maketechart.com or at maketechart everywhere else. So with that out of the way, let's get to today's episode. Today we're joined by Anna Fuste, a creative technologist and HCI researcher. Anna joins us to share her story as a creative technologist and researcher. A journey that's included time with a creative agency, being a part of Google's Creative Lab, studying at MIT Media Lab, and now focusing on R&D at PTC with the Reality Lab. Anna shares her insights around creating amazing experiences and creative projects through simple prototyping techniques. She is the creator of a really cool platform called Hypercubes, an augmented reality platform that helps children understand computational concepts drawn from their physical surroundings. You can keep up to date with all of Anna's work online at annafuste.com. So with that said, let's get started. Hey, Anna, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Oh, the pleasure's all mine. I'm super excited to have the chance to speak with you and to get to learn more about you and what you're up to and what your journey was like. So before we dive into all that, can you tell us a little bit about those early days? Like, where are you from and what was it like growing up?
Yeah, I am from the beautiful city of Barcelona that I miss a lot. And I am currently living in Boston. So when I was a kid, I went to school in Barcelona, and during the summer, I used to go to this little town called Pals in the north of Catalonia, which is really, really beautiful. My grandpa had a restaurant there. I also worked there in the kitchen for a while, so probably that's the reason why I hate cooking right now. And so, yeah, it's really amazing with amazing rocky beaches and plenty of seafood and paella. And so when I was a child, I wanted to be an astronaut. So I decided that I wanted to study aeronautical engineering, but that didn't go as expected. I quit the first year. I didn't feel very motivated, and I went through some personal and psychological trouble that I am happy to have overcome. And then I quit the degree. I spent some time in Nicaragua with an NGO. And then when I got back, I started over. And I decided that I wanted to change gears and do something completely different. At that moment, I was very interested in video editing. I would constantly make videos for everyone, for my family, for my friends' birthdays. Any opportunity that I had, I would make a video and I would play with graphics and effects, and I really enjoyed it. So I decided to study audiovisual communication back in Barcelona. And it was great. We did cinema and television and some design and photography. And at the end, we had some subjects about interactive stories. And that really got me. We created some basic experiences in Flash. And at that point, I realized I needed more. I wanted more control over things. And so here's where my journey with code started. So after that, I decided I needed some technical knowledge that I didn't have. And so I started a degree in multimedia engineering. We did some C# and C++ and some computer graphics with OpenGL. And I started working with processing at the beginning. And then at the university, one of my teachers gathered some students and we started a group called Seamless Interaction. We also started learning Unity a little bit and started working on human-computer interaction research. We did some augmented reality prototypes. This was back in 2012. We also worked with projections and we had this little robot. And I remember we made this Space Invaders collaborative game with the Kinect. And I started to be very interested in emerging technologies, user experience, design and quick prototyping with new ideas. So once I finished the degree, I remember I started looking for a job. And at that moment, I was always checking creativeapplications.net, which is this art, media, and technology website. They are the ones that publish the Holo magazine, which is amazing, by the way, and I highly recommend it. And so I found a posting from a design studio, Cinemod Studio in London, which is owned by an artist called Dominic Harris that creates interactive digital art. And I swear to you, the moment I applied, I really didn't think I would get that job, but it happened. And so I went to work for Dominic Harris, and it was one of the best opportunities and experiences I had. He is great. And he does all these interactive digital installations, and he hired me to work there as a creative developer. And that was a big thing for me. It was the first time I moved to another country, and I didn't know a lot of people in London. And in the studio, I was the only software developer at that moment. So at the beginning, I was a bit scared, but everything turned out to be really amazing. We created these beautiful moving landscapes. He would base his art in nature a lot. So he had this vision. And then the artworks were like windows to another world. We had these massive 84-inch screens, and we would use depth sensors and touch to create an interactive piece. And then the user would feel immersed in this jungle, for example, or an underwater scene or a wall of butterflies. And then we would travel to different art fairs like Art Basel or Art London and install the artworks that we had been working on. And seeing the reaction of people was super gratifying, so that I liked a lot. So for me, it was a great first experience in the professional world as well as in the art world. I will always feel very grateful that Dominic gave me this opportunity, helped me grow and shape my creative process, as well as improve my technical skills and learn how to find things by myself, even if I didn't know how to make them. And after that, I got accepted at the MIT Media Lab for the Master's in Media Arts and Sciences. So I've kind of been working on and off and studying on and off. And so I moved to Boston. The Media Lab is really crazy place. It's kind of crazy, weird, fascinating. There's all these people coming from all over the world, and every single one of them are crazy. I mean, crazy in the good sense. I always say that what I valued most of the Media Lab is being able to listen to very smart people from different backgrounds and with different worldviews, biologists, psychologists, engineers. That's what makes the Media Lab such an interesting place, the intersection of different disciplines. They always sell themselves as this anti-disciplinary lab. So the boundaries kind of fade between different disciplines. People work together to come up with interesting out-of-the-box ideas. It's kind of the mecca of creativity. And during that period, I also had a chance to work at the Google Creative Lab during the summer of my master's. I worked there as a creative technologist. Now I'm working at the PTC Reality Lab. PTC is a company that focuses on industrial innovation and digital transformation. And at the Reality Lab, we look into the future of human-machine interaction. We are a research lab exploring new interfaces for different use cases, from controlling a robot interface to 3D printing. And we work a lot on spatial computing and augmented reality. And so, yeah, you can see how my trajectory has been a bit all over the place. I always have this impression that I like so many things. And so I jump from one side to another. But all of my experiences have given me something that I have taken with me and have helped me improve this creative process.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's super cool. Wow. What a journey. That's incredible. Oh, so just to kind of go back to the beginning, you said video is what kind of got you started in the space. But once you start to explore what else was possible, as you look for more control and to do more with your creative outlet, what were some of the challenges you had to overcome?
I mean, I really liked video, but then again, as I said, I was doing a degree that was more based on the design and creativity that you would apply to create like a nice short film or the design of an interactive story. And so all these like technical background that I didn't have, that was an obstacle that I saw that it was very important for me to overcome. And that's why I started studying this more technical degree that gave me all this knowledge that I needed.
That's super cool. And so along the way, you mentioned some of those projects that kind of got you started. I want to talk about one in particular if we can, but I also want to hear about your most ambitious project to date. So I guess, can you tell us about the most ambitious project? And can you then tell us a little bit more about the Hypercubes project? Maybe it's the same one?
So yeah, I think Hypercubes is kind of the most, I have several projects that I consider very ambitious, but maybe Hypercubes at the software level is the most ambitious one. It is this platform for children to foster computational thinking skills in a playful way using augmented reality. It uses paper cubes that children can build themselves and then use to control and program a stream of different characters, shapes, or animals. Each one of the cubes has different behaviors attached to each side. And then all these behaviors are related to a computational concept, like emitters, graphical transformations, or effects. And so this is my master thesis project that I did at the Media Lab. But then I also have other projects, like on the hardware level, I worked on Aurora Fugaz, which was this lighting installation. I worked on it when I was at Cinemod Studio. It was a light installation with a ring of LEDs that would respond to users' movement, but it was kind of big. So like we had this massive ring of LED strips, and then we had a Kinect on the ceiling, and then the user was orchestrating a performance of light and color and sound around them. So we installed it in Lima in Peru, and it was an adventure, honestly. We had all these people helping us, but the end result was super rewarding. I really like to work on it.
Sounds amazing. So while I'm sure it varies from project to project, how do you approach the creative process of building tools like design systems, creative systems that help you then realize your art and concept? How do you know what to use to do what? And what's that discovery process like?
Yeah, so I mean, it's a mix of different things. And obviously, I have been working in a lot of different environments, and it varies a lot. But for creativity, you know, often people think about it as one magical moment in time where someone has this fantastic epiphany, and that's about it. And it has never worked this way for me. And I think I can say for most of the creatives that I have known, it varies a lot depending on the project and the context. And I often start with a spark, with something of my interest. And then I think by myself if it has potential for whatever I'm trying to do, but that doesn't mean that this spark or idea is valid. So I often seek feedback from people around me, from work colleagues, friends, which is a bit of a tricky thing, to be honest, because it can be very helpful, but it can also demotivate you a lot if people don't understand what you have in mind. And that's the reason why it is very helpful to do quick prototyping before talking about the idea with others. For me, quick prototyping has been the basis for trying to communicate my ideas. And you don't need to create a final product, but more of an example of how your idea will materialize. When I was at the Seamless Interaction Group back in Barcelona, we often created fake prototypes, quick prototypes with paper or fake videos that would tell us in just a few seconds if that interaction worked, if the idea made sense. It is very different to have an idea of something in your mind than seeing it with your own eyes working in front of you, even if it's just a trick. For example, when we were working on this research idea with a projection and a tangible interface, we wanted to create a tool that would help people learn concepts in augmented reality, such as physics or basic geometry. The concept was moving a little robot on a surface and then a digital interface overlaid on top. The physical robot and the digital interface would interact with each other. And this was obviously an ambitious project. And in order to have something working in front of you, it would take some work and some time. To do this, you need to program a robot, and you need to do some projection mapping and synchronize everything. So instead of having to do everything in order to validate your idea, we created a fake prototype. We had a magnet inside of a paper cube that would represent the robot. And while someone was updating the digital content in the projection, another person would move the magnet from underneath the table. And then we made a video out of the interaction. Everything was fake, but we could immediately see what worked and what didn't work in respect to user experience. In an hour, we had a quick fake prototype, and we could identify if our idea was valid or not, or what parts of it worked and which didn't work. And so I have tried to use this approach in the different projects I have worked on, and it has been very helpful in my validation of ideas. And then the places I have been working on are very diverse, and even the projects within each place can be very different. At Cinemod Studio, we would develop commercial projects and also artworks, and both were very different, but shared some creative routes. The commercial projects had more client requirements to respect and follow. This can make it easier to come up with an idea, but also frustrating for the little creative freedom you end up having. I always enjoyed the artwork creation and development way more. Dominic had this vision for his work, but it was very collaborative. He listened to our feedback and insights. Our point of view was always valued. So we would sit down together and do some brainstorming sessions, and then again, develop some quick prototypes and iterate again with brainstorming around these prototypes. And one of the aspects that I found more enriching in this environment was the different backgrounds we all had in the studio. The intersection of disciplines, again, similar to the one at the Media Lab. We were software developers, but also lighting designers, 3D artists, electrical engineers, and we were from different countries. And I think this is one of the aspects that fuels creativity in a group of people. Creativity is more powerful when it is collective. I listened to your podcast with Kate, and she pointed out how we are all creative, but we turn off our creative insights as we grow up. We create these rules in our brain that we forbid ourselves to cross, but each one of us has created a different set of rules. They can be similar, the more similar our experiences have been in the past, but having a conversation with someone that has a slightly different set of rules than you have, I found this to be fuel for creativity for me. And in a way, that is what happens at the Media Lab. The anti-disciplinary component of it talks about this. The intersection of worldviews is one of the triggers that can break these boundaries, these rules that we have created for ourselves. Obviously, you have to be open and with a flexible mindset. And finally, there are also a bunch of techniques to come up with new ideas and create new projects. I sometimes use a kind of game where I make a random list of words, of concepts, objects, and technologies, and I pick three random words from the list, and then I force myself to come up with an idea with these three words. You can come up with some nice out-of-the-box ideas doing this kind of exercise.
One thing that, you know, struck me as super interesting is the way that you guys come up with these ways of reducing friction and reducing, you know, the cost to create something, especially like within an hour with paper, with magnets. Is there a secret to that? How do you become creative enough to build prototypes?
I think that the point here is to try to lower the barrier to creativity. So have the most basic system that you can have as quickly as possible and prototype very fast a lot of different ideas and not have to develop this entire project and have to work on it before being able to validate your idea. So I would suggest that people create these fake prototypes that would allow them to see if their idea is valid or it's not, and what parts of it is valid or are not valid. User experience is something that you cannot evaluate until you try it by yourself or you see it in front of you. So having these kind of fake prototypes, it's super helpful process on the creative process.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe as a quick follow-up, like, what indicators do you look for to know that, like, we should invest more time, more technology, and take this prototype to the next level? What marks a successful prototype?
I think that, first of all, is your feeling of how you interact with it. With a fake prototype, you see very fast if something works or if it doesn't. Because you are working with it. You are actually touching it. You are playing with it. So you very quickly have this sense of what works and what doesn't. And then you have a sense of what can be improved. And I would also try to have more people collaborate with me and try this fake prototype that I had and then create a video out of it and share it with more people and get feedback from other people. I think that's very important as well. And then based on their reactions, a lot of times you can tell if this idea has potential, if people is interested in the idea, if there's things that can be improved or not.
Awesome. Excellent insights. That's amazing. Earlier, you mentioned that, you know, each experience has given you, a new tool in your toolkit for the next, job or project. Can you tell us a little bit about what your day-to-day work is like today, and especially when it comes to turning, you know, a creative idea into a commercial project?
Yes. So currently working at the Reality Lab at PTC, as I said, and it is a research lab in the company. So we have a lot of freedom in how we perform our job every day. We constantly brainstorm and have conversations about a lot of different things, about the company's challenges, the future of human-machine interaction, the future of technology. And these conversations generate ideas in the group that we evaluate and consider for development. If we are constantly talking about a concept, then it means that there's something in there that we are curious about. So we start thinking about prototypes that we can build around that. And then each one of us spends some time working on their own research projects. It is very interesting in the lab how we all have a design and arts interest and background, which is weird because we work on this manufacturing company and we are all engineers, but it's so cool to be able to share all these insights with everyone. My boss has an art background. My colleague Ben is an amazing photographer, and a lot of our brainstorming sessions feed from our artistic insights, even if we are talking about machines and manufacturing. Again, the intersection of disciplines is what enhances our creativity. We give a lot of importance to the aesthetics and how to present our ideas so that people click when they see the prototypes. And we are often giving demonstrations to outside partners. And I use these opportunities to receive feedback from them and bounce ideas between people with different focuses. And here's where, if there's a lot of partners that are super interested in an idea, we circle this idea inside of the company. And then we see if it's going to impact features from the actual products that the company is selling. And then we also have these side fun projects that we work on sometimes that sometimes are used as well for the company. We worked on this origami project, for example, which was a platform to do origami using augmented reality, so you could see the instructions of how to create Santa Claus with augmented reality on top of the paper as you were folding it. And we did this out of an idea that we had at a random moment in time, and we thought it would be interesting. Obviously, our company is not a company focused on origami, but we did this as a side project inside of the lab. And marketing team was super interested on it, and they used it to promote the company and give this application to other people to use. And it was a super success. So even like ideas that you think that are not aligned with what the vision of the company is can work in other environments or in other sectors of the company.
Yeah, absolutely. That's super cool. I love it when those, you know, out of the box ideas find their way into other things or other applications. It's always cool to see the origins, you know, of something that started off that way.
Yeah, definitely.
So you mentioned it a little bit that you guys, you know, brainstorm and talk about these concepts about what would be possible in the future. So where do you think the creative or technology industry is headed, and how have you seen it evolve since you were a student to what is possible today?
Yes. So, I mean, that's a hard question, but in my opinion, I think there is this democratization of tools. The old systems based on a company releasing a tool and users making use of it is kind of obsolete. And the boundaries between toolmaker and user are kind of vanishing. So we are moving towards a future where anyone will be able to shape their tools and customize to whatever they need. And then I haven't been working a lot on machine learning, but there are all these people exploring ML and creating tools to make it more accessible. And I find very interesting the collaborative part of it for creativity. One example is the work of, and I'm not going to say this name right, but So Wen Chung. She creates these artworks in collaboration with a robot. It is a human-machine collaboration to empower human creativity. And I think this is where we should all be headed, try to empower creativity by taking advantage of a system that gives us the space we need at a certain moment in time, but helps us in times where we get stuck, for example. So it's kind of this collaboration between humans and machines, but always giving the human the space to act and have control. And then I also have been working a lot on spatial computing lately, and it is becoming a very trendy field right now. Emerging technologies are opening the doors to a new spatial computing paradigm that I think will have bigger impact in the future. As humans, we are physical and spatial entities, and it makes sense that we augment our interfaces and our interactions with spatial context. If we endow the objects, the spaces, and our own interactions, not only with semantics, but also with spatial context, we can create way more intuitive interfaces for ourselves.
That's super cool. I'm looking forward to seeing that evolution, you know, take place. It sounds extremely exciting to me anyway.
Yeah, it's exciting.
And so you mentioned throughout the conversation, you know, a couple different resources like creativeapplications.net and a few others. Are there other resources that you would point out that would help somebody kind of get interested in this space? You know, maybe from the creative coding spectrum all the way to HCI?
I would point people towards following people on Twitter. I follow a bunch of very interesting people that post their projects and their ideas, like Shirley Wu, Netris Gaskins, and Su-Wen Chang, the one I mentioned. They define themselves as research artists, which is a concept that I really like. And I think that it's very interesting to follow their work. Netris is this person working on GAN art, and it's super interesting. And then a bunch of other names, Saskia Freak, Beeple, James Patterson. And if they want to start learning how to code, then I would point people towards Anshivman and the Coding Train, tools like Processing or the Glitch platform. The work of Jack Lieberman on AR is amazing as well. Well, all his work is really good, but lately he's been working a lot on AR interfaces, and it's just really, really cool. On the human-computer interaction side, I would suggest people look at the different prototypes that are being developed at the Media Lab, the Media Lab website. There's a lot of content in there, super exciting. And then I would tell people to go to museums, more exhibitions, basically this.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, tons of great resources. And we'll include, you know, as many of those as possible so people can check those out. And so, you know, maybe to wrap up this awesome conversation, is there any words of advice that you could share, you know, with a younger version of yourself? One thing that you wish you knew, or so just some words of encouragement or something to think about as somebody gets started, you know, today in 2020 down this path?
When I was young and I started, I would have liked that someone told me not to get overwhelmed with failure or change. And I would have liked a lot to have someone to tell me that it's fine to not be a late night coder or a 24-hour a day coder. I would always super guilty for wanting to rest and not code when I got home. And I would think that I would never be good enough because I didn't code late nights, which is stupid, to be honest. And so, yeah, that. And I also would have told myself to explore more art, to try and go to museums more, to absorb more, because creativity generates creativity.
Absolutely. Excellent words to live by. Anna, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us today. It was amazing to have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, that's a wrap. Thank you for joining me for another episode of Tech Plus Art podcast. We're a very small team behind this project, so we greatly appreciate all your support. If you love our content and these podcasts, consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts and sharing it with a friend or two. This really does go a long way in helping us get discovered and reach more creators. As always, you can find us online at maketechart.com and at maketechart everywhere else. See you soon.